This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, it's Friday, March 20th, and we're live. I'm live coming to you from my self-quarantine, and my guest is coming to you from her self-quarantine. And my engineer is coming to us from a group quarantine of four engineers sitting far apart in a room. So this is a really weird time. I mean, it's a really weird time, and it's not going to be over anytime soon. And I wish I had some words of wisdom for you, but I think my one piece of advice is that you should do what you need and want to do. So I don't want to be prescriptive. I feel like there's all these posts like, hey, now you can be super productive and get X, Y, and Z done. Be productive if you want. Don't be productive if you don't want. Everyone, you should keep to your routine. I don't care if you wear your pajamas and like don't shower for days. I'm mildly like quoting a Tina Horn amazing tweet today on that. And I just, you know, people are feeling all their feelings, and you can share, you know, COVID-19 information on your social media, or you can share dog pictures and memes, or you could just sign off entirely. And it's totally fine with me. I just want to give people permission to be however they're going to be. I think that's really important, and not judge. The only people I'm judging for reals are those fucking young adults on the beach in Florida. Okay, so they I am judging, because that was not cool. And I don't know if like they've left the beach by now, but the last like news report I saw, not cool, kids. Not cool. I sound old. Okay, so since we're live, that means you can call us. Is that exciting? I think it would be fun to talk, because, you know, it's like we're here, we're queer, and we're lonely. And so why not be the time that you wanted to call into my show a million bazillion times? Why not let it be now? The number is 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. We're going to be talking about sex and depression, which seems timely. I would love to talk about dog noses, but here we are. Also, there's some big changes. I don't know if you've listened to the past couple shows, but I am leaving Voice America and venturing out on my own to independently produce Sex Out Loud as a podcast. So what does that mean for you, my amazing listeners? Well, if you currently listen to my show via the Voice America app or the website, you need to switch to a new platform. And that could be wherever you get your podcasts, the Apple Store, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever. There are not going to be any more live shows. It's all going to be podcasts from here on out. But Raymond and I are determined to bring you a brand new Sex Out Loud. Guess what? We're redoing the opening. It's true. And we just hope to play with the format and switch it up now that we'll have lots of freedom. I really appreciate all of you listening. We may have a few glitches. We're going to try to keep it seamless, but the best thing you can do is subscribe on your podcast feed, wherever you get podcasts. Then you won't miss an episode. You can also check out sexoutloudradio.com and my social media at Tristan Taramino across all platforms and at Sex Out Loud Radio on Twitter for the latest news about the big move. So next week is my final show with Voice America. 7.5 years, a great long-term relationship. Okay, going to give you the number one more time and then tell you who I've got. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Joellen Noddy is a writer, speaker, researcher, and mental health advocate whose work explores the impact of depression on sex and relationships. Since 2012, she has written about sex, mental health, and how none of us are broken on her award-winning site, The Redhead Bedhead, as well as for Glamour, the BBC, Bitch, Psych Central, and more. Joellen has spoken at Clark College, University of Chicago, University of Tennessee, Woodhull's Sexual Freedom Summit, Guelph's Sexuality Conference, and the Playground Conference. Joellen's book, The Monster Under the Bed, Sex, Depression, and the Conversations We Aren't Having, was published by Thorntree Press this month. And so Joellen has had to put on hold her entire book tour. So now is the time, people, to buy books, especially from someone like your independent publishers, some of whom are still operating online. Go to indiebound.com for that. Welcome back to the show, Joellen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first, how are you? Are you in self-quarantine and are you well?
I am in self-quarantine, so it's me and my dog. And I'm doing better. I was sick with not the big scary thing for a couple of weeks. So That was weird because everybody got scared, you know, when you tell them you were sick. But we're doing okay here. We're keeping it together.
Okay, good. That's the best we can do, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this book. I've been excited about this book. I was a patron of yours and I got an early copy and I want to start just with your own story because you've been passionate about these topics for quite a while. And I know that there is a personal piece of this for you. So tell me your story.
So if we go way back, in 2011, I walked away from a sexless marriage. And I've come to realize since then that a big part of why that marriage even happened was that my late 20s, I had my first horrible bout with depression, and I didn't understand how sex and depression interacted. So we just took the stance of like, well, we're not having sex because of depression. And when I started to feel better, when I suddenly had like meds that worked and stuff, and I realized, oh no, I want to have sex. I just don't want to have it with this person I'm married to. That was when kind of everything blew up. And like a year later, I started writing about sex and I changed antidepressants at one point and one of them made me not able to orgasm and I wrote about it and people started emailing me and sending me messages and it all kind of snowballed from there. I feel like I did like one or two articles in that first year and then we hit 2014 and I started doing surveys and all of these things that built towards this book.
So there's a lot of books out there on depression. If you, you know, put that in the old search engine, how do you feel like this is different?
So I got super depressed in 2014 and went looking for books about how to deal with this in a relationship because my partner had never been with anyone with depression. And what we found one that was okay, but we found that most of the books were 10, 15, 20 years old. Nothing had been updated. Some of them were espousing very, to me, like outdated ideas, you know, protect yourself from your partner's depression and they'll pull you down with them. And I realized that there was nothing out there that the book I wanted to read didn't exist. Mm. So that's how I kind of started writing it.
Yeah. Let's talk about some myths and misunderstandings about sex and depression. I mean, I think, first of all, there's so many myths and misinformation about sex, and then there's so many myths and misinformation about depression and mental health. So it seems to me like the collision of the two is just ripe for lots of confusion.
Oh, yeah. So much confusion. And a lot of it stems from the fact that we tend to, like, desexualize anybody who is not, you know, doesn't fit into a certain box, and that box usually requires you being healthy. And, you know, you come forward with a mental illness and you get kicked out of the box of people who are allowed to have sex. And so I think that informs the way people approach sex and depression and leads a lot of us to say, well, yeah, but depressed people don't have sex anyway. To me, that's the biggest myth out there. Depressed people across the board, sex is over. It will kill your relationship. And so many people are out there believing that, saying that. It's what everybody said to me when I told them I was writing this book. So I think that's like the big bad myth.
Because, of course, and you write about this in the book, people can like respond different ways sexually. Some people can actually become more sexual when they're depressed,
yes,
and some people can become less sexual.
Like, even I bought into the myth, right? When I started this project, I didn't leave any room for anybody to report that they had more sex when dealing with depression. It was just like, how much less sex did you have?
Right.
And when I started doing interviews, 25% of the people I spoke to said that they were having more sex when they were depressed.
I mean, it makes perfect
kind of
sense.
A big turning point too.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense though, because dopamine, endorphins, adrenaline, all those good chemicals are basically released in your body when you have sex. And so why not, you know, as a way to boost your mood, also as a self-soothing technique. I mean, we don't like to talk about sex as a self-soothing technique. You know, we want it to be like the greatest thing we've ever done and the most intimate. And we, you know, saw a higher being and all that, which can happen with sex. But it also can be soothing.
Yes. And one of the things I found was that there was, and I guess, you know, there's an array of reasons that anybody has sex, but there's a whole array of reasons that people with depression found their sexual activities going up. And one of the big ones was, like, I wanted to feel something. I wanted to connect to something. I felt so numb all the time. I wanted to not feel that way. And then there were others that were like sex as a self-harm mechanism. So there were kind of both sides of the coin.
Okay, we got to take a break. But I hear we've got a caller. Thank you for calling. We're not going to take your call right now because we have to take our commercial break and hear from our sponsors. But we are going to go to our listener question at the top of the next segment. You don't want to miss that. You can also call. Look, someone picked up the phone to talk to us. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Spring is on the way, and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power vibrator, or the popular Womanizer Duo, or the WeVibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to transsex 101, including my class on March 21st. How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring. Hey, listeners, Tristan here.
Have you been hearing the word mindfulness a lot lately? I mean, I seem to see it everywhere in the media, on book covers. It's seemingly everywhere. Here's the thing. It's not just a trend. Mindfulness actually works. For me, practicing mindfulness and meditation has improved every area of my life. Really. But maybe you can't make it to a group or read a book or go to a class. No worries. Just download the app that I use, Calm. Calm is the number one app for sleep, relaxation, and meditation, and over 60 million people use it. Calm has sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories for grown-ups, and they can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. Stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. They also have soothing music from artists like Sam Smith. There are guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more to help you relax and de-stress. For my listeners, Calm is offering a special limited-time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, with new content added every week. Get started by going to calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Relax, de-stress, and find your peace with Calm.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to give a shout out to all my sponsors, The Pleasure Chest, Uber Lube, and Calm. I think, you know, we all need pleasure in our lives right now. Uber Lube can facilitate that pleasure. And for me, I think listening to guided meditations, thinking about mindfulness have really helped me. You know, listening to soothing things has really helped me during this time. And so I've been on my Calm app a lot. We are live talking with Joellen Noddy about her book, All About Sex and Depression. You can call us at, because we're live, 323-SEX. Nope, that's not the number. That's the voicemail, Tristan. Switch gears. 866-472-5788. Like, I only have to learn the number for like two more weeks and I'm still fucking it up. 866-472-5788. So before the break, we started to talk about this book, which is The Monster Under the Bed, Sex, Depression, and the Conversations We Aren't Having, about kind of people's myths and misconceptions about sex and depression, and also how in this sample study that you did, you found 25% of people reported that they had increased amounts of sex when they were depressed for all sorts of different reasons. So you did this study. You're not a doctor or a sociologist, but I'm, you know, I did my own research for opening up. So I am a fan of people being able to interview and talk to people about things and make sense of those interviews. I don't think you need a PhD in sociology to do that. What was one of the most surprising things you found? When you were interviewing people, sending them interviews, talking to them about this topic, were there any of your own assumptions that got challenged?
Honestly, it was less that my assumptions got challenged and more that I was surprised by what I figured out was the conversation people wanted to have. I went in talking to people about how medications had changed their sexual function, how depression had changed their sexual function, what that looked like. And I wanted to kind of give voice to that. And in the third round of interviews, a whole bunch of people talked a lot about whether their relationship worked or didn't work when they had depression and what they felt, you know, made it work or what they felt built the resentment in it. And eventually that led to like the big turning point of the book for me, which was talking about how I always say depression doesn't kill relationships, resentment does. Mm. And we build the resentment because we don't know how to handle the depression. And
right.
So that was kind of my big overall aha moment.
Right. And indeed, like in this book, you talk a lot about relationships. It's really not just about sex, which is typical because once you start talking about sex, you get into the relationships between the people having sex. And partners can vary between having their own mental health issues, having experience with other people being depressed, or like actually not knowing anyone who suffers from depression. And so like some partners are literally baffled about what's going on.
Yeah, some partners look at it and they have no idea what this experience is. It doesn't make sense to them. Like the answers look so easy, but you know, they don't know what it's like inside it. I found in the responses I got, people who were more successful navigating depression with their partners had partners who had either dealt with mental illness themselves or had like a close family member, a mother, a father, somebody in their life that kind of put them through that experience so they knew what it was.
Yeah. And also we can have a sort of a broad brushstroke notion of what depression is. We can read the symptoms on WebMD, yeah. Right? But it's not the same as being intimately involved with someone, maybe potentially living with them or spending a lot of time at their house or them spending a lot of time at your house. I think that is different than just what we sort of think of in the big picture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's when your partner is living with depression, especially if you live with them, you are kind of living with depression too. It's just, you know, it's more on the outside for you. It's why I always say that I feel like sometimes that the older books I read talked a lot about, you know, the partner without depression, dealing with the partner and their depression. And what I realized is I think it really needs to be the partners are on one team and the depression is on the other.
Yes, so you talk about getting on the same
relating
team.
To it.
Yeah.
Get on
you start,
the same
you talk
team.
About that in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of
and
my,
why
it's
is that
one
important?
Of my big things.
And why is that important? Because it is a shift from what other stuff says, other writing about it says.
For me, it comes back to that resentment piece. If you're not on the same team, you're putting your partner on team depression and you're saying that, like, you know, the depression is their deal and they have to deal with it and take care of that. And, you know, you're kind of stepping aside. If you get on the same team with them and you kind of learn a bit about what that experience is. I always talk about finding a common language that you can speak about it. If you work with your partner, your relationship can become stronger rather than, you know, they're not feeling good, you're not understanding, now you don't like each other, and your relationship gets weaker. Mm-hmm. And no one mm-hmm. wants to have sex.
Right, exactly, including the person who's not depressed. Right, because of the dynamics.
Exactly.
Okay, we've got the amazing sex educator, Elle Chase, on the line. Oh. She's the author of Curvy Girl Sex. Let's plug everyone's books.
Yay.
Elle, do you have a question for us? Hi, Elle.
Hi. Hi, you guys.
Hi.
Hi, Elle.
Hi. So I do have a question. You know, I got an advanced copy of the book as well, and I loved it. And one of the things that really spoke to me as someone who works with people with self-esteem and body image issues is that you talk about people telling you that you have to love yourself before anyone else can love you. Mm-hmm. And I found that really great sort of thing to think about because I find personally that it's not true. But can you tell me a little bit about how that works with depression?
So I felt like in the responses I got to the surveys and the interviews and whatnot, I heard from a lot of people who felt like they were on the outside of like love and relationships and whatnot and were being told that like it was because they didn't love themselves and when they loved themselves, it would be better. And mm-hmm. that was me in my early 20s. And I remember thinking, well, how can I convince people I love myself and, you know, get this all over with because I'm not actually going to. And what mm-hmm. I've realized is not only is that approach wrong, it's, in my mind, ableist and kind of cruel. Because mm-hmm. it tells people if you are not in, you know, tip-top mental shape, then there is no love for you. You don't get to be part of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Which seems harmful, which seems harmful, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially because depression, obviously you take a hit on your self-esteem. And I don't know, when I have depression, like my inner critic goes absolutely bananas with telling me all the things that are wrong with me. And and I beat myself up for it. And so, and the notion that then I don't deserve love or lust or desire, it does seem cruel.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we see different iterations of it, even in different communities. I know I've heard a lot of, in poly circles, I've heard a lot of like, you really have to figure your stuff out before you even try poly. And like, I get where we're coming from, but all of these things just serve to make people who aren't together, who don't love themselves, feel like they're on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, is loving yourself a fixed, I mean, I asked this to Elle too. Is it really like a fixed idea? Because I feel like there are days when I really love myself and then other days, like not so much.
Well, yeah, I mean, feel like there's, it's more like knowing yourself and understanding yourself and knowing that your relationship with yourself, like your relationship with anyone else, is going to have ups and downs and times you don't like each other. And, you know, it's just how it is. It's not, it can't be as, I don't think it can be as simple as like, now I love myself.
Mm-hmm. Al, do you agree?
See, I have the idea that, and it's a little nihilistic, but I don't feel like we're ever going to completely love ourselves, because as human beings, we're dynamic and we have different issues that come up at different points of our life. So what I like to do for myself and ask people to do is to aim and reach for acceptance of how you are in that moment. And I think that also is a good way to look at it for people with anxiety, which is also a comorbidity oftentimes for depression, is you're getting a lot of messages from your anxiety that aren't true. And so to be able to accept yourself having anxiety and hear yourself having the anxiety and just saying, that's not who I am, that is the anxiety talking. And just sort of apply that to that other area of your life, like depression or self-loathing, or that it's not necessarily true. It is just my quote unquote disease talking, or that kind of thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think acceptance is such a piece that comes through in this book. The notion of kind of accepting who you are and how your brain works, and it may work differently than other people's brains, but facing it in a way that is conscious, and then you can kind of go from there in addressing maybe some of the issues around it. Okay, we got to take another break. Elle, thanks so much for your call. Elle Chase.com, right?
Elle Chase.com.
Great. Yeah. So you can check her out, and she's on the social media. She's at the Elle Chase on social media. Okay, we're going to take another break. Hey, look how easy that was. Elle Chase picked up the phone. She called. We talked. You can do it too, I promise. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. If you're not listening live, and I'm not shaming you for that, you can call with your questions and comments about this show or any other show at 323-SEX-8266. That's 323-SEX-8266. That's the 24-hour voicemail line if you're not listening live. Stay tuned. More with Joellen when we get back.
Hi, everyone. Tristan here. Hey, lube makes everything better. Duh. And I mean everything. Vaginal and anal penetration, hand jobs, hand sex, masturbation, fingering, grinding, oral sex. You name it, lube will improve it. When you're choosing a lube, you want one with high quality ingredients. UberLube is silicone with a little vitamin E. That's it. No parabens, no petrochemicals, no strange things you can't pronounce. I have a very sensitive pussy, and that is not a metaphor. It's easily irritated, and plenty of lubes I've tried just do not agree with me. I like Uberlube because it's scent-free, flavorless, simple ingredients, and long-lasting. Plus, it's got a pump, which is easy to use and hygienic because you're not always touching the top of it. Oh, and it will not stain clothing or bedding. Any spills can be cleaned up with detergent and water. Right now, Uberlube is offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use code Tristan at Uberlube, Uberlube.com. Uberlube lets you feel what you want to feel.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking with Joella Noddy, the author of the brand new book, The Monster Under the Bed, Sex, Depression, and the Conversations We Aren't Having. And Elche stayed with us on the line because we talked during the break, and she said, I have one more thing to say, and how can I deny Elche one more thing to say? So, Elle, you're back on the line with us.
Well, what I wanted to say is when someone's recommending a book for me to read that is, you know, self-help or something in that sort of vein, I think, oh, it's going to be heavy. It's going to be filled with lots of stuff I'm going to have to look up in the dictionary. And I can tell you what I love about this book is how accessible it is, what an easy read it is, and that there's humor in it as well. You can just read right through it. And I think for people that have a hard time concentrating and a hard time reading like I do, I think that is the gift, another sort of gift with purchase for this book is that it is such an easily digestible book.
And so that's important, right?
Well,
because when you're depressed, you don't want to read like a depressing / difficult book to read. You just quite frankly don't.
No,
it's actually why we did an audiobook because I feel when I'm depressed, not only can I not deal with heavy, but I can't deal with reading to myself. So I do audiobooks, and that's why we recorded one of this book.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for
really,
calling.
Really smart.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.
Remember, you can call us too and talk to us. 866-472-5788. So in the last segment, Joellen, you brought up medication. And so there's an issue here, which you talk about in the book, which we've talked about many times on this show. And that is when doctors recommend treatments and medications, they rarely take into account how they're going to impact your sex life. Unless you are like super pushy and really advocate for yourself, they do not consider your sexuality a part of your overall health and well-being. And that has dramatic effects for people, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And there's like a trickle-down thing that happens too because, so I tell a story in the book about how a doctor put me on an antidepressant and I very clearly said to him, I can't have this affect sexual function. And he looked it up in a book and he was like, no, it's not going to happen. Cool. And when it did and I stopped taking it, he sat down with me and he said, you know, thank you for coming to me and telling me that you are not taking this because you're not having orgasms on it, because nobody tells us that. And so then we can't report that. So then that doesn't go into the book that I look things up in, because we don't know it's happening. It goes down the line and it affects everybody after you.
People have shame. They feel like they're the only one, or they don't feel safe to talk about sex with their doctors, which we know is a common problem.
Oh. Especially here in the U.S., I just feel like there's such stigma attached to both mental illness and sex that putting them together is like terrifying for a lot of people.
Yeah. And also the idea that he didn't know, I mean, wouldn't you say, just from your knowledge, that a lot of SSRIs, which is one of the most prescribed antidepressants, and mood stabilizers do have sexual side effects?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm gonna end up ranting, but I feel like...
No, don't rant. Rant. Go ahead. Rant.
We live in a world, there was a study a couple years ago, or a thing that happened, where a bunch of women were having vaginal pain, and I don't remember why, and they reported that their doctors suggested that they have anal sex instead.
Yeah.
Because, okay. I guess it was important.
And you know, I'm a fan of the anal, but that seems really extreme.
Yeah, it felt like they were telling women they were there to be a penetrated vessel, and, you know, as long as you can find a way to do that, it's fine. And I think that this is all one big thing, right? If we're not taking the right of women to not be in pain when they have sex seriously, we're certainly not taking their need to orgasm seriously. And
right.
We're not going to take the lack of lubrication seriously. And then on the flip side, if you've got a penis, there's all sorts of stigma with that and not being able to get erect or not being able to ejaculate. And, you know, there's a whole other set of meds they'll throw at you. It's all basically a mess because we're not great at talking about sex. I mean, we're great, you and me, but most of the world is not great at talking about sex.
Well, and I think you also make an important point in the book that you are not saying, like, medication is for everyone. You want people to make choices about that, but you do need to address these very specific issues around medication because there are so many people taking them. And like you said, they don't even know. It's like you had this dramatic thing, which is I'm not having an orgasm, but other people may have dampened desire, a harder time getting aroused, a harder time having an orgasm, but maybe sometimes they can. So it's a lot of different sexual side effects.
Yeah, and several of them, like the dampened arousal, people write off because they think that is just necessarily part of the depression package, right? I have no libido, I have depression. So, yeah, it's all the myths kind of come together and feed each other. It's not really helpful.
Yeah, yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, one of the things that's really clear in this book also is, like, this looks very different for each person and for every partnership, you know, every person that they partner with. So I want to talk a little bit about that you've got a lot of different strategies here depending on kind of what the issues are, because there's not the same issues for everyone.
No, but I will say some of the strategies to me they're adaptable like couple to couple, but they're kind of universal in the relationship portion of it, right? Where I think everybody needs to get on their partner's team. I think everybody needs to have a common language because that's the way you find out what this particular partner's depression experience is and how you can navigate it together. Then from there, it becomes a little more choose your own adventure.
Right. It does because it's going to be specific to partners. And I think also certainly like couples counseling and individual therapy can help navigate these, you know?
Yeah.
And I like your honesty and your directness about like, hey, this is hard and this may not be the relationship for you. Like it, and that's okay too, right? That it's hard to be in relationship with folks who have mental health issues, although who doesn't have mental health issues, but okay.
yeah.
Right? Line those people up. Is there like if I checked that off, like on a dating thing, wouldn't I just get zero results? Anyway, if people are being honest.
Yeah. Yes, but, sorry. People is, nope, I've lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Let me ask you another question. Let's talk about the concept in your book of support, don't shove.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I firmly believe that people in general, whatever you're teaching, people do better if they're led and not pushed. And so, you know, I'm not... So in this case, I think a big thing that I saw out in the world before this book existed was books that were like, you know, and you might have to make your partner get up and you might have to, you know, force them and you know, and they, you know, they don't know and whatever. And I think that's not going to get anybody anywhere. And so as I would tell anybody in any relationship, meet your partner where they're at. And in this case, where they're at might be wildly different than where you think they should be at, but support them there, and that will help them move forward rather than shoving them forward, which will just make them not like you.
Yeah, I mean, it's something as simple as, do you want to go for a walk later? Rather than, you really need to get out of the fucking house.
Yep.
Right? See, those are very different. The tone of those are very different. You're trying to accomplish the same thing, but if you're telling someone they should do something or they have to do something, or like, this is the thing that's going to make you feel better, that does not work for most people.
No. No. And it makes people angry. In my relationship, my partner, I know if he says, "Hey, do you want to go get a latte?" that he probably feels like I need to get out of the house, or like I'm getting worked up about something and need to calm down. But the fact that, you know, he also knows I will drink a vanilla latte anytime, any day, is his way of like supportively taking me out of whatever's going on and making me feel loved and happier and a little more functional and letting me breathe and do all those good things. That's what you want your partner to do.
And you can also say no. Because you're really not in the fucking mood.
Right. Yes, there are days where the latte is not happening.
Right. Okay, we're going to take another break. This is your last chance to talk to me and JoAllen ever. No, just on this show. So if you want to call us, because we had another caller in the queue and that person hung up. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Before we go to break, I want to tell you what's going on my Patreon. I have a Patreon, which is for people who want to support me as I write my memoir. This memoir writing stuff is really intense, and I've used my self-quarantine to go through old journals, letters, artifacts, I like to call them artifacts, and things in my archive. And wow, that has opened my eyes. It's sparked stories that I want to tell in the book, and also some of it is just fucking hysterical. So things are heating up on my Patreon. I'm updating more than ever, and there are things on my Patreon that you're not going to be able to see on my social media. First of all, drafts of chapters of my memoir. That's numero uno. But also, I've got a lot of stuff from my childhood, and I've scanned a lot of it, and I'm going to be posting a lot of it on Patreon. So if you've been on the fence about becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino, and I super appreciate the support. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Spring is on the way, and the Pleasure Chest is ready to help you get sprung. On March 8th, celebrate International Women's Day and get the women in your life a gift. You know, sex toys keep on giving. So what about the LaWand limited edition Feel My Power vibrator, or the popular Womanizer Duo, or the WeVibe Chorus? From March 8th to the 15th, save 10% on all orders $100 and up. Online only, some exclusions apply. On March 22nd, LaWand presents Pleasure Confessional at the West Hollywood store. Step into the confessional booth and tell us your story of empowerment in or outside the bedroom. Win prizes and enjoy exclusive discounts on the empowering LaWand line. There are free sex ed classes throughout the month on everything from strap-ons to transsex 101, including my class on March 21st. How to Plan a Gangbang at the Upper East Side store in New York City. As always, get great pleasure tips on their Instagram at Pleasure Chest Stores, and go to pleasurechest.com for everything you need to celebrate spring.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. The monster under the bed, sex, depression, and the conversations we aren't having. That's what the conversation we are having tonight is about. And we're doing it with the author of that book, Joellen Noddy. Hey, Joellen, it occurs to me that this, that we should go over something that many people do know about, but a lot of people still don't, which I think is super useful. And you do review in the book, and that is the spoon theory. Can we just go over spoon theory?
Yes. So spoon theory was given to us by a woman named Christine Misandrino. And it really is just a way for people, Christine has lupus herself. So it's designed for people with chronic illness to express kind of what their budget of mental energy, physical energy, ability to do things is for any given day. And, you know, that budget can change. You can have less spoons. You can have more spoons. And what depletes your spoons can change. But once you introduce kind of the language with a partner, it's great because you have this easy way to communicate like, no, I'm not doing great today. I can't do that thing today. Or I'm feeling amazing today. Let's go do more things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's such a concrete idea. Like, I'm out of spoons, or I only have one spoon left and I want to make dinner. Right. So I can't do both.
Yeah.
I can't make dinner and go out.
Got it. Like, it really clicked for my partner once when I had just come back from a business trip and we were supposed to go to an opening for some organization that night. And I got all dressed and we got in the car and he turned to me and he went, "You can't do this, huh?" And I was like, "No, I really can't." And he said, "Yeah, I looked at you and I realized what it means when your spoon drawer is empty, and that your spoon drawer is not only empty, but it's upended on the other side of the room."
And you're now like in negative spoons that you're going to like carry over to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you talked about being on the same team, and you have this chapter, chapter 6, Your Team in Action. And one of the things I love about this chapter is that you have actual scripts for people where, yes. I mean, I just think this is one of the most useful things in the world, especially when we're talking about sex and relationships. People don't always have the language. They don't know what to say. They don't know how to communicate their desires, their needs, their wants, their issues. And so you like provide these actual like talking points, which is like, if this is what you want to say, if this is what you want to communicate, how about this? Or this is a good way to say this. I loved that section.
Well, it started from a kind of petty place. It was like something somebody had said to me years ago, and it always irked me and got under my skin. And I was like, well, if I'm doing this book, that's going in there somehow. And one day it led to a whole conversation on Twitter where people chimed in with things people have said to them and how it affected them. And we looked at what people might have been trying to communicate in that moment and why it came up short. And that all made it into the book, which made me really happy.
Because that's the other thing too. It's not about like walking on eggshells around the depressed person.
Yeah.
But it really is about making these small adjustments, which don't cost you anything, quite frankly. These small adjustments, which can really like empower and validate a depressed person rather than kind of shame and judge them and shut them down.
Exactly. One of my favorite shifts that's happened in the last couple of years on social media is we've all gotten a lot better at saying, okay, you're communicating that you feel crappy today. Are you looking for suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it used to just be people would bombard you with everything that they thought would help you. And it was really kind of disheartening. And now you get that. You feel more in control of it when somebody says, like, do you want suggestions? Because you can say, no, I really don't. Just like, agree with me that this sucks right now.
And this is the beauty of your book. There are skills in here that have everything to do with relationships and communication, and are not just for people where one or both partners is depressed. There are some basic skills here about how do you want me to show up for this? Do you want me to fix it? Do you want me to like try to fix it, or do you want me to just let it be and be present with you? It's one of the biggest things you can do in a relationship, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like there's that section. I kind of took a thing that another sex educator, Kate Kenfield, says about asking your partner if they want empathy or strategy. And I added my own little adaptation because sometimes I want just to not have to think about what's going on. So I always say empathy, strategy, or distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because once you communicate it, your partner knows exactly what's going on. In the past, my partner would go into fix-it mode and try and fix things, and I just wanted to not think about them. And then we'd all end up mad at each other.
Right. I have fix-it partners, and I'm also a fixer, so I know this from both sides of the equation, which is that sometimes that is not what people need or want at that moment. They don't. What do you wish?
No, and
go ahead.
No, it's okay. I think we're good.
Okay. What do you wish everyone will walk away from this book with? One message, a few messages. What do you want people to know?
I want people to walk away from this book feeling empowered instead of like feeling like we are, you know, at the mercy of depression. I want people to feel like, okay, if depression is happening, I have all of these tools and we can try all of these things and we can work together. There's like a path through it. As opposed to, I feel like a lot of us just think, whoops, depression, that's going to blow up your relationship. And so I want people to feel like they have some control, like there are things they can do.
Oh, and I think that's really important. Well, for me, control is important in all circumstances, which is why this whole quarantine thing is just making me so insane because... I literally like had my, you know, my schedule mapped out through September and now none of that's happening. So it's a really good time to practice radical acceptance. But I mean, I just want to say to folks that I really do this book. First of all, this book is groundbreaking in that no one has focused specifically on these things. There may be a blog post here and there. They're mostly written by Jo Ellen. But this really hones in on some important stuff. And I also think it applies to a lot of folks. I think if there's any kind of mental health struggle, a lot of what Jo Ellen is offering applies here. Is that, yes, she's focused on depression, but a lot of this is also just about destigmatizing mental illness, getting on the same page with your partner, having a sense of understanding, and like she said, having a sense of power that you're, you know, you don't need depression to like run your life. You can run its life sometimes. Sometimes it does run my life.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So, we only have a couple minutes left. Do you have any closing wisdom that you want, that we haven't talked about, that you want to talk about?
Oh my goodness. Quick note about sex when you're dealing with depression. I always say that a big problem that trips people up is they want the line from here to sex to be like short and straight and full of really familiar stuff. And when you're actually navigating it, it helps to understand it might be long and winding and involve new things you've never tried or thought of, but that's not bad. Like adapting your sex life, changing your sex life a little doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's a way to find the pleasure you want now instead of thinking, I'll wait until the depression's gone.
Oh, it's such a good point because also in these various life stages that we have, if we get too invested in this is what turns me on, and this is the way I like to have sex, and this is the way I come, or this is what makes me come, or helps me come. If we can't let go of those scripts, we're going to get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And it causes people to like freeze up, and then they just spend all this time not having sex when they want to be, and that's not helpful for anybody.
Okay, people, the title of the book is The Monster Under the Bed, Sex, Depression, and the Conversations We Aren't Having by Jo Ellen Noddy. Her website is redheadbedhead.com. Great website. On Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook, she is Jo Ellen Noddy. Let me spell it. J-O. ELLEN, one word, NOTTE. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Andrew, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern. My guest is going to be Jacqueline Friedman, and we're going to talk about her new book, Believe Me, which is all about what it means to believe women. It's an extraordinary anthology, and I can't wait for you to hear that conversation. Till next time.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.